We will take a brief recess in between the presentation of the first and second clauses. The court is now ready to hear arguments from petitioners in Bailey v. Cherokee County Appraisal District.
May it please the court, Mr. William E. Bailey will present argument for petitioners. He has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors. With respect to the entire brief that has been filed, the petitioners will adopt the entire brief in its entirety containing authorities in the event that, for lack of time, I'm not able to cover all of those points that I hope to cover this morning. Therefore, for this purpose, all of the authorities in the brief the petitioner will adopt as part of their oral arguments. Going directly into point of error number one, the Court of Appeals erred in holding that the accrued real property taxes that accrued during the pendency of the estate of W.E. Bailey did not constitute debts of the estate by reason of the fact that they weren't claims against Mr. Bailey. We believe that that was error, and the Court of Civil Appeals further held that those delinquent accrued property taxes that accrued subsequent to his death during the pendency of his estate administration were not claims against the estate under Section 3C of the Texas Probate Code. Specifically referring to the definition under 3C, which, if your honors would reference to page 3 of the brief, it contains a definition of claims for purposes of 3C. For purposes of 3C, claims includes liabilities of descendant which survive, including, and I'll use and emphasize the word, taxes.
These were not taxes imposed prior to his death, but after.
After his death. That's correct, Your Honor. What did the legislature mean in 3C when they stated the phrase, liabilities of a decedent which survive, including taxes? Well, the matter seems so well settled in our jurisprudence in Texas that I can only find one recent case. The Court of Appeals of Texarkana in Oldham v. Keaton, 597 Southwest, 938 at 945, which specifically held that post-death property taxes and post-death income taxes were indeed administrative expenses of an estate. Now, specifically, the issue before this court is not whether these alleged delinquent property taxes, which had accrued during the intestate administration of the estate of W. Bailey, it's not whether they were Mr. Bailey's debts. It's a question of whether they were debts or charges against the estate property. Well, now, the Court of Civil Appeals decision conflicts with this court's decision in Blanton v. Mays at 472 Texas 417, 10 Southwest 452. In Blanton v. Mays, the court was presented with the identical issues as appears before it today, and that is whether or not accrued property taxes which accrue subsequent to the date of the deceased represent claims or liabilities of the estate. And I quote at 10 Southwest 453 what this court stated. Taxes due at the date of death of the testator and those subsequently accruing would constitute debts of the estate. The rationale of this court's holding in Blanton v. Mays has been followed in Buckner Orphan's Home v. Maven, 252 Southwest 2nd, 726 at 728. Texas Appeals, Eastland, 1952, Dallas Service for Visually Impaired Children versus Broadmoor, 2nd, 635 Southwest, 2nd, 572 at 576, Texas Appeals Court of Dallas, 1982. In Sidney versus Gidney, we're met squarely with the issue. There, the court recognized that charges against the estate, such as inheritance taxes, obviously inheritance taxes could not be considered to be a liability of the deceased if they were post-death. Incurred, that inheritance taxes and administrative expenses all must be paid from estate property. notwithstanding that these expenditures were not, quote, from Sidney versus Gidney, not the debts of the testator. Now, Sidney versus Gidney was reversed by this court, but not on this point. The Supreme Court stated at 322 Southwest 2nd 507 at page 511 that under modern day statutes, all of the decedent's property, both real and personal, are liable for the payment of all debts of the estate. And all of that property goes to the personal representative under Texas Probate Code Section 37, which is exactly what happened in this case. Now, is there any language in the Texas legislature that indicate whether post-death property taxes are claims against the estate under Section 3C? I submit, Your Honors, that under Section 329A1, which provides authority for a personal representative to borrow funds, that there is an express enumerated purpose set forth by the legislature that property taxes are considered proper claims of the estate. And I'll quote from that language. Under Section 329A, which defines circumstances where money may be borrowed by an executor for or representative for any of the following purposes, quote, under A1, for the payment of any, and I emphasize the word any, ad valorem, income, gift, estate, inheritance, or transfer taxes upon the transfer in estate or due from a decedent, that would cover pre-death property taxes, or his estate, which would cover post-death property taxes. Regardless of whether such taxes are assessed by a state or any of its political subdivisions or by the federal government or a foreign government, the legislature, in using the word any under Section 329A1, would seem to have indicated that any ad valorem taxes would mean any taxes that were owed prior to the deceased's death that were still remaining to be paid during his administration, or those taxes which accrued subsequent to his date of death. The further language contained under 329A1, regardless of whether assessed by a state or any of its political subdivisions, would seem to place this case squarely in focus of the respondents as this case originally originated in the lower court. The clear holdings of the Court of Appeals in Oldham versus Keaton that post-ad valorem taxes are proper administrative expenses of an estate, this court's longstanding precedent in Blanton versus Mays, the legislature's clear directive under Section 321A1 clearly indicates that for purposes of Section 3C, liabilities which survive, including taxes, include post-death real property taxes which accrue during the administration of the estate. There is no dispute that the estate was in administration throughout this entire proceeding. Going on to point of error number two,
why not keep the estate in administration as long as possible to avoid payment of the taxes?
Your Honor, the by law, under Section 401 of the Texas Probate Code, the estate may not be closed as a matter of law until all debts are paid.
So why not keep it open so that you don't have to pay any taxes?
Well, you're going to have to pay taxes. It's a question of when.
Well, you just exhausted in the operation of your estate, and then you say, sorry, no money for taxes.
No, in such case, all that would have to be done would be to apply to file a claim. There's not going to be any escaping of liability. If a claim is filed in the probate, there are specific orders to which payments may be made. If all payments may not be made to any given class, and I've referenced that in the brief, then the administrator may only pay with the permission of the court. And when there's not enough money to pay everybody, everybody has to be paid pro rata. This is not a question of the estate escaping any liability. The probate court will order that property be sold in order to pay the tax, as contrasted with the district court, whose only power in a probate matter in this instance was to grant a foreclosure of the lien, which would have meant every property in the estate would have been sold without any preservation of the estate. Is there any other questions on point of error number one? Going on to point of error number two, the Court of Civil Appeals, apparently on the rationale that I've read, made a determination that since these taxes were not claims against the estate under Section 3C of the probate code, then personal liability against the heirs and against the administrator must necessarily follow. Court of Appeals cites no prior precedent for its position. The basis of the respondent's case for personal liability rests under Section 32.07 of the Texas Tax Code, which states property taxes are the personal obligations of the person who owns or acquires the property on January 1 of the year. Well, now, the statute, the word person is not defined. The word person who owns or acquires is not defined. However, in the case of Trimble versus Farmer 305 F. 2nd 157, this court held that as between a life tenant and a remainderman, that the imposition of personal property taxes falls upon the person who has possession of the property. And therefore, in that situation, a remainderman was not liable for taxes that accrued, notwithstanding that legal title vests in them. A close examination of Section 37 of the Probate Code, which was applicable in this case, provides that whenever a person dies intestate, all of his estate shall vest immediately in the heirs at law. Is this light coming on for a reason? I'm sorry. I have 5 minutes for me. A close examination of Texas Probate Code reveals the following. When a person dies intestate, all of his estate shall vest immediately in his heirs at law. However, I want to emphasize, when the court issues letters of administration, the administrator shall have the right of emphasis possession of the estate, and he shall recover possession and hold such estate in trust to be disposed of in accordance with law. That's an imposition of a trust created as a matter of statute. In this case, to summarize the issues under point of error two, there had never been a distribution of the properties to either of the petitioner heirs, William E. Bailey and Robert E. Bailey, who were the heirs at law under Section 37 of the Probate Code. In accordance with Perkins versus Kane Coffee Company, 466 Southwest 2nd, 801, the issue was squarely before the court as to whether or not a liability, personal liability, could be imposed under Section 37 as a matter of law, and the court stated that there was no personal liability under Section 37, merely inheriting property. There were two qualifications that they further stated, that even though the liability was in rem and not personal liability, that there must be an allegation in the petition, which was defective in this case. It's also one of the grounds in point of error four that there was no allegation that there was any showing that the property had been distributed to the petitioners. I mean, in this case, the heirs at law. The second point in Perkins' case was, once having established that those allegations in the pleading, the liability would be limited to the property distributed to them. It's clearly an in rem liability. As to the petitioner, Alibi Bailey, there were no pleadings reflected in the record that she had applied under Section 162 of the Texas Probate Code as a community administrator. She had no expanded powers. There was no showing in the record, and it did not exist, that she ever filed for petition under Section 385 of the Texas Probate Code, a condition under Section 385C as a condition precedent to the ability of suing her in her individual capacity. Even her own sales of property, as is reflected in the record, any sale of her community interest was subject to the approval of the Probate Code court. The probate court had total and exclusive authorities with respect to the sale of any of these property.
Any other questions? You have 5 minutes remaining for rebuttal.
All right. I'm going. Okay. All right. Thank you, Your Honor.
We can use some of that time now if you want to.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Are there any questions? Thank you, counsel.
Court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the Court, Mr. Peter W. Lowe and Mr. Tab Bell will present arguments for respondents. Mr. Lowe will open and will speak the first 15 minutes.
Mr. Lowe?
Yes, Your Honor.
How can there be any personal liability when there's been no distribution?
Your Honor, I think the property tax code controls this case. If you look at it straight from the probate code, then that argument may be made, I suppose, although most of the definition, I don't claim to know very much about the probate code, Your Honor. I've struggled with it for some weeks now, and I'm still not sure I understand it. I do believe, Your Honor, this case is controlled by the property tax code.
There's a case called Blinn versus McDonald, which goes back 100 years in Texas law, which addresses this very point. It seems to be directed against the position you're taking. Can you distinguish Blinn versus McDonald, 1898?
No, Your Honor, I'm not familiar with the case. I'll call it. But a child born in Jacksonville Independent School District in 1973, the year of the decedent's death, would have been 3 years old when these taxes started going delinquent. That student graduated from high school in the last year or so, would have graduated from high school completing an entire scholastic career in which petitioners didn't contribute 1 cent in taxes to support it. This case is controlled by the property tax code. This is what the legislature was getting at when it established the property tax code. It stands for everything, what the petitioner's argument stands for everything the property tax code set out to eliminate. Remember the old boards of equalization, how a prominent taxpayer could hold an entire community hostage by just refusing to pay taxes, claiming the value is wrong? Those days are supposed to be over. The legislature expressly provided a strict property tax protest procedure. It arose from the practical understanding, let's get this stuff done in 1 year and let's get it done. And the code is hostile to the length of taxpayers. It is hostile, pursuant to the constitutional authority to close liens without any notice to the taxpayers at all. The legislature has not affected procedures anywhere near as harsh as constitutional provision, Article 8, Section 13, which allows us to seize stuff without the necessity for a suit in court. Article 8, Section 15 puts the special lien on property. In response to your question, Justice Cook, the entire tax warrant procedure would be completely gutted if we could not have personal liability, I believe.
Counsel, I guess if I hear you correctly, you're arguing that the property tax code supersedes the probate code and divests the probate court of its administrative authority.
No, Your Honor, that's not what I apologize.
Then how can the property tax code apply to property that is in administration and probate?
Well,
and go through that to impose personal liability on heirs who have no personal title, who have no legal title.
Well, Your Honor, as I understood Section 37 of the probate code, on the death of the decedent, they do have an interest in the property immediately.
They have an interest, but they do not have title. The property is in administration.
Your Honor, I'll check that provision again, but I was thinking that there is a case that I believe that we have cited in our brief at some point, or one of the briefs at one point, and I'm fumbling through my stuff right now, but Your Honor, Section 37 of the Probate Code says, all the estate of such person not devised or bequeathed shall vest immediately in his heirs at law. And I guess we're just saying that entitles us to take a personal judgment. I think that's the whole purpose of what the Constitution is getting at when it says that the lien on this property can be foreclosed immediately. In addition, Your Honor, we've got the property tax code provision, which is cited in our brief again, which was alluded to by the petitioner, Section 3207, which says that it becomes the personal liability of the owner on January 1. I believe our contention is that with the property tax code is harsh. But the Constitution has authorized it to be harsh, in our opinion. And if that lien attaches on 3207 lien attaches on January 1, we think we ought to be able to foreclose it. There are two primary issues in this case: whether the action can be brought in district court, and second, if it can be brought, can we foreclose? Petitioners argued at length that it can't be brought in district court. There are a number of cases which allow taxing units to bring their claims in district court. I just don't think there's any question we can't bring it. I think the question is whether we can foreclose, and that issue is not argued in the petitioner's brief at all. That's not even a point of error. I think if we properly brought this case in district court, then we ought to be able to foreclose our lien on it. The probate code says absolutely nothing about delinquent ad valorem taxes. They're mentioned once or twice, but just in passing, what they're getting at is if you pay ad valorem taxes, then they're credited as an administration expense. These taxes were never paid. And the definitions in the probate code, going through the talking about the claims, the presentation, none of that seems to apply to ad valorem tax law. I'd say to the court also, we've cited a line of cases that describe basically that say district court is the right place to bring this suit if the exception to the general rule that the probate court has jurisdiction is when the county court is without power to determine and fix equities. And another key sentence, in respect of legal rights of the parties, appears to be well established. In this case, there's no real argument about what the legal rights of the parties are. And the county court clearly cannot grant the relief we're seeking. In fact, this could be dragged out forever just like it's been. We can't get total relief in the probate code. In this case, this is about as clean a case as we're ever going to see. The heirs happen to have the only interests in the property. What are we going to do in mineral interest cases when royalty owners all over the state have interests? What are we going to do when the action arises in El Paso and the land is in Cherokee County? What are we going to do?
How long have these taxes gone unpaid?
Since 1976, Your Honor. Death of the deceased.
1976?
Yes, Your Honor. That's the first year. 1973, the decedent died. The decedent paid his taxes.
What is the problem with closing the administration or bringing some closure, paying the debts?
The main thing is delay, Your Honor.
Who benefits by this delay other than perhaps?
We sure don't. There's an attorney general opinion from 1939 or 1940 that points out, Your Honor, why make this, it's cited in our brief, but it has specific language that says, look, don't make the taxing authorities go through these hoops.
Well, who's benefiting from this delay?
The petitioners, I assume, Your Honor.
How?
By not paying the delinquent taxes, Your Honor. Is that what you mean, sir?
Obviously, the taxes are going to have to be paid.
Right, Your Honor.
So how are they benefiting?
Well, I'm not sure the taxes have to be paid. Now, there's some dim illusions, vague illusions in the petitioner's brief, Your Honor. In the first place, the adjudged value of the property is rapidly approaching the point where the taxes are going to exceed it. And if there's nothing else in the estate to pay the taxes, the property won't sell for what the taxes are.
Well, then how would they benefit? If the property will not sell for anything,
they owe more taxes. Because they owe more in taxes.
Well, how would they benefit, though? The sales price will be less than the taxes.
They owe $1 million in taxes and property sells for $900,000. We can't go after other property on our tax lien. They just gained $100,000 by not paying the debt. And we're approaching that point fairly rapidly. In addition, Your Honor, as I was going to say, there's some vague allusions in the brief. What it seems to me they're trying to promote here is exactly what that AG opinion is touching on. That once we get into probate court, there's all sorts of language about presentment of claims for acceptance or rejection. And we're very concerned that this is going to be similar to a bankruptcy action where we start talking about redetermination of value, where we're talking about half the community property interest in the widow. I'm not sure if there's going to be a dispute about how only half can be sold for this. There's all sorts of mess that looks like it's coming up.
Seems to me it's a very simple case, you know. Papa dies, get some land, leave some to mama and the two boys. The two boys are here are the heirs at law. You know, what is keeping to bring this case alive, to bring this case to some resolution, some closure?
Well, Your Honor, we thought we could do that in the district court. We thought that because of the problems that arose in general, maybe I'm not understanding the court's question.
Well, I want to know, maybe the question shouldn't be directed to you, but I'll ask counsel in the rebuttal. You know, what's the holdup?
I think this dependent administration is complete artifice. I think it's calculated for delay. I think there's just no reason. They're arguing that they don't owe the taxes because there's been no distribution to the heirs. Well, they haven't distributed their own property to themselves. I don't get it.
Has there been an accounting filed with the probate?
Not that I know of, Your Honor. I don't know that anything like that is in the record. It's just an absolute artifice to allow possession of the property without paying the taxes.
Well, what action have you taken in court to Texas doctors?
Well, we brought the delinquent tax action, Your Honor, because we wanted to foreclose the lien. The court, at this point, we haven't... really talked about foreclosure of the lien. We focused on the personal property liability. And clearly that's the tougher question. And Mr. Bell is going to address that a
Counsel,
little bit too.
The purpose of the probate court code is to protect decedent's estates and to avoid their exploitation, abuse, and depletion. Are you aware that under the probate code, as a judgment creditor, that you could go in and you could state a claim to the court and that the assets of the estate could be sold to pay the claim, including the tax liability?
Yes, Your Honor.
That you can reach much more than just the property that in question? The probate court could order the property sold, and other property and other assets of the estate could be looked to meet that obligation.
Yes, Your Honor. We're not saying the probate court.
I understand what you're trying to do under the property tax code, to go through the property tax code and impose personal liability on the heirs. The problem is, by law, it's a highly questionable that there isn't any personal liability at this point in time. Whereas the assets of the estate are totally liable at this point in time.
Your Honor, I guess my best response to that is to say the problems, looking at the big picture from filing all these delinquent tax suits, is that this is the cleanest possible case. It clearly puts us in the worst light. What if there were lien holders, and what if if there wasn't enough in the estate to pay? And I don't claim to be an expert, but why are we having to present these claims to the probate court? If you look at it from the probate court, it's a little shaky. But if you look at it from the property tax code and the constitutional authorization to do these things, at least with liens.
If you ignore the fact that the estate's in administration, ignore the fact that the probate code exists, is what you're saying.
But, Your Honor, you're saying ignore what the property tax code
exists. This court is charged to not ignore the law, but to make it harmonious if possible.
Yes, sir. And to respond to that, Your Honor, I'd ask the court to look at the Code Construction Act. And there are several provisions that apply to this case, including the statute that's passed later in time ought to prevail over the one before. And if the property tax code and the probate code, if the property tax code became effective in 82, the probate code, I believe, in 55. I believe if the court works through it, our position is if we work through the constitutional authorizations in Article 8, and then down into Section 32. Section 33 of the Property Tax Code, Your Honor, absolutely requires us to file a suit. We can file a suit against real property any time after it goes delinquent. In our petition, we're required to seek foreclosure of the lien, and if we're granted a judgment, the court is required to order foreclosure of that lien. I mean, it's basically working through it, and most of these things are in our brief. It's Section 3341, 3343, 3353. We've got on January 1, we have a lien attaches to personal liability of the owner. We're claiming that pursuant to Section 37 of the tax code, they're the owner. And basically, Your Honor, I think I understand where the court's coming from.
It seems to me if you're going to harmonize and you wanted to assert the property tax code for purposes of foreclosure, you might well be able to do that. But any excess liability that's not covered by property that is foreclosed on, you'd have to look to the estate for that liability rather than to heirs who have not yet taken legal title to the property you foreclosed on.
I hear the court's argument, Your Honor, and I clearly that it's a troubling point. I guess our response would be that in this sort of dependent administration where we believe that the failure to distribute is complete artifice, that it's an alter ego situation.
I'm not arguing. I'm not, whether it's an abuse of the law, an abuse of the process by these heirs is another question, but I don't believe that you can say that the probate code and its provisions are an artifice.
No, I didn't mean to say that, Your Honor. I meant to say the situation before the court, the failure to distribute the estate.
The actions of the parties in this particular case.
Yes, Your Honor. Again, I'd like to point out to the court, this is just an accident. There are three heirs, and they have all the interest in the property. Again, there could be all sorts of heirs all over the state of Texas.
But that's not the case before.
No, Your Honor.
Do you know if the decedent's death has been paid?
Say it again, Your Honor.
Has the decedent's death been paid?
I do not know, Your Honor. I don't know if anything's been done. It seemed as though, from the argument in the brief, it seems that basically nothing's been done. Nothing's been issued. As long as this can stay open, they seem to be happy with the status quo.
But are there not parts of the probate code that give you relief?
Possible. If we submit to the jurisdiction, if we submit our, I think clearly we might get relief in the probate code, yes, but we chose to do it through the property tax code, and we believe very strongly that that we're authorized to do that. Your Honor, at this time, I'd like Mr. Bell to take over.
Any other questions, Mr. Bell? Thank you, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Tab Bell. I'm appearing on behalf of the City of Jacksonville, and I'm here, I guess, to address the point of error number two, which is the area where y'all have directed most of your questions, that is personal liability. In response to one of the previous questions about who benefits, I think that's a good question because it emphasized the need of the taxing jurisdictions to have the tool of personal liability. This particular estate involves virtually exclusively real estate, but instead of being real estate, if the estate had been a personal property, a business, if the personal property had been sold to a buyer in the ordinary course of business or a bona fide purchaser, our lien on the property would no longer exist. And if this court were to hold that there's no personal liability in those heirs, then they would clearly benefit because they would literally evade taxation because we would have no opportunity to pursue anybody. If the property were sold to a buyer in the ordinary course of business, there'd be no lien on the property. If there is no personal liability because it's pending in an administration, then we have no tool to collect the taxes. It's literally uncollectible, and there's no authority for the tax collectors to write that tax off the books because it's public money, so it remains in the delinquent tax.
Counsel, I'm confused. This is the pending administration. That means no property can be bought or sold. None of the assets of the estate can be moved without the approval of the probate court. Certainly the taxing authorities could protect their interest by petitioning in the probate court to have those interests protected. That is a tax liability on the subject property.
Yes, sir. One of the reasons that we started in the district court in this matter was because we could not get complete relief in the probate court. The whole idea of picking one form or the other is to go to a forum where you get complete relief. This was community property, and if we went to the probate court and got an order directing the estate to pay the decedent's portion of the taxes, it would only cover his one-half community interest. And if there was not any cash in the estate to pay it, property is going to have to be sold. They could only pay the decedent's one-half community property interest. By going to the district court, we can foreclose the one-half community property interest of the surviving spouse. We only have to go to one court. If we got a probate court order, we'd still have to go back to district court to file against the surviving spouse to foreclose her one-half interest.
Isn't the surviving spouse in somewhat different circumstances related to her community interest than the other heirs who have only a hereditary interest in the community?
I suppose so, but I think we'd still have to go.
She has a vested interest.
Yes, but we'd still have to go to district court to dispose of her interest or the son's interest. We could not dispose of their interest in probate court. Back to the who benefits question, there are other situations where we would need personal liability to recoup our claim for taxes. It's becoming more and more apparent now that property has become encumbered with environmental damages or toxic waste. The value of selling the property is essentially nil because the cost of cleaning up the property exceeds its market value. Nobody would want to buy that property at a tax sale. We therefore need the tool of personal liability to go against these heirs. There's no evidence of any kind of environmental damage in this case. But
is there any evidence that the heirs are responsible for dumping toxic waste?
No, not in this case, Your Honor. I'm just
presenting. But yet, you would seek to impose personal liability on them for the property they are inheriting?
Yes, Your Honor, and the Environmental Protection Agency will impose that same sort of penalty on any owner of property, even if a previous owner caused the damages. It might not be a situation we'd like, but the alternative is the taxing jurisdictions wind up with a piece of property they cannot sell and with no personal liability. They have no one to go after to collect those taxes. It's a question of who loses.
When was the toxic waste product put on the property?
There was none in this case, hypothetically, if there were. That's just another example of the reason why we would need personal liability, though. If there were toxic waste on the property, we couldn't sell the property. The estate wouldn't have resources to pay those taxes because any available cash in the estate would be used for the cleanup. There are other situations where if there was a tax lien on the property, that might be extinguished. If there was a mobile home, the property tax code provides for a recording of a mobile home lien here in Austin with the Bureau of Licensing and Standards. If that lien is not recorded, then the lien is extinguished, and again, you would need a personal liability to go against those people for any recovery.
I know you can make up a lot of hypotheticals, but can you address this case?
Yes, sir. The reason that I think that petitioners would be personally liable in this case is because I believe the probate code specifically vests title in them at the date of death. The code says shall vest in the heirs at law. And I believe that in turn means they incur personal liability. Section 32.07 of the property tax code provides that the owner of the property on January 1 shall be personally liable. It's a mandatory or a directive statute. It's not discretionary. If this court determines that there is no personal liability on January 1, then that in turn means that arguably no one has personal liability because there's no determination of ownership.
County, do we have to overrule Glenn v. McDonald in order to rule in your favor?
I'm not aware of that case either, Your Honor, but I would suggest that Section 32.07 of the tax code arguably has overruled that case because it imposes personal liability on the owners of property as of January 1.
How many years did the city of Jacksonville wait after Mr. Bailey died before it sought relief in the courts?
This suit was filed in 1987. I can advise the court that we were able to obtain some partial payments from the individuals prior to the suit having been filed in the early 80s. My law firm started representing the city in, I believe, 1982. I'm not aware of what actions were taken before that time, but I suspect none.
So 14 years passed, 1973 to 1987?
Yes, sir. We did receive some payments in the interim, but...
Partial payments?
Yes, just paying part of the taxes. If you look at the record, you see that there's different years due to different entities, and some of the years have been paid, but by 1987, no payments were being made to anyone in the suit was filed.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Mr. Bader, this estate has been open since 1976. In that interim period, have the decedent's debt been paid?
Yes, Your Honor.
So the only thing that
That's
remains,
a matter of record. Just the taxes are the only liabilities that prevent this estate from being closed.
Is there
closed.
Any bar at all from closing this matter, or bringing closure to this issue?
Yes, until the taxes can be paid.
Well, what's keeping your client from paying those taxes, or the estate from paying those taxes?
The estate from paying those taxes?
Yes, sir.
Basically, Your Honor, there are several tax disputes, not necessarily with just this jurisdiction, but with other jurisdictions as well.
Let's just focus on these. On the
we have urged that the matter be handled in the Cherokee County Court of Law, which sets in probate, so that a particular property, as opposed to all properties, being subjected to a foreclosure, to pick out a particular piece of property to sell to liquidate this debt. So far, we have not been able to get the taxing jurisdictions to submit a claim in the Cherokee County Court of Law.
The argument they're making is that we have not gone to the probate court because we can not get full relief from the probate court against Mrs. Malaby.
That's incorrect, Your Honor. Under Section 385C of the Texas Probate Code and under Section 162, Mrs. Bailey could have applied for a community administrator under Section 162 of the Probate Code, or she could have applied for a petition under Section 385 of the Texas Probate Code. That is not evident in the record. Mrs. Bailey's property is subject to all of the debts of the estate, and that matter is of record in the lower court.
Is there any reason to continue the administration of this estate other than to avoid paying the taxes?
Your Honor, there is no attempt to avoid paying the taxes. In fact, the only reason for the administration is so these taxes may be paid. If we were to allow the district court's judgment to remain in effect, then all of the properties would be sold for a fraction of their value for taxes.
Counsel?
Yes, Your Honor.
I seem to detect an attitude that there's a lack of good faith on the part of your clients from opposing counsel. You have just stated yourself that there's nothing to prevent them from filing some claim and proceeding with their interests, their taxing interests in the probate court.
Not at all.
There's also nothing to prevent your clients and parties from petitioning the probate court for approval to sell off some of the assets of the estate to pay these tax liabilities, is it?
There have been some sales, Your Honor, and there have been some payments made to liquidate certain of these debts. This is the residue of the
remaining.
They seem
to be arguing that your clients are using the probate code to circumvent the provisions of the tax code, the property tax code, and to avoid its enforcement. And, that, and they seem to be arguing that's what you're asking this court to do. To prevent
they may be arguing that, Your Honor, but certainly there is no benefit at all. These taxes have got to be paid at some point in time. There is no question. There is no benefit to allow something to continue.
Unless and until, as they assert, no personal liability can be imposed on any of your clients, and ultimately the assets of the entire estate are depleted through this tax liability, and they're left with an unpaid obligation and some property that doesn't meet the extent of that obligation.
Well, Your Honor, as a matter of record, this is reflected of record in certain applications for sales of real property that were filed during the pendency of this action, which became part of this record through pleadings. The estate had, in essence, a value of around close to $1 million. The subject property taxes, and it's principally all real estate, the subject property taxes that they have sought to hold the petitioner personally liable amounts to $90,608.48. I don't believe there's going to be a depletion in this, and if the court correctly reverses the Court of Appeal and directs that these respondents take their claim in the probate court, it will be a simple matter of the probate court then deciding, rather than selling everything and rather than dissipating the entire estate, to select a particular piece of property so that the property may be sold and these taxes may be paid and the estate may be preserved.
Getting back to the question Justice Gammons asked you, this is something you could have done. You could have gone to the probate court and said, we want permission to sell this parcel of land so that this taxing authority can be paid.
That has been done, Your Honor.
That has been done?
That has been done. And
well, why hasn't the taxes been paid?
All of the properties, part of which would be the home place, Mrs. Bailey. There's other properties.
How many acres are involved?
There was 146 acres of property.
You're telling me that 140.
There are other properties, Your Honor. It's not just the homestead.
You're saying none of these properties. Are you saying you have petitioned the probate court to sell some of these parcels so that these tax authorities can be paid?
And
the court has refused to grant you that.
Oh no, Your Honor. The problem is in general the nature of real property during these economic periods of time. The properties
there's
have
no buyers. Is that it?
Not a lot of buyers, Your Honor. There's been some properties that have been up for sale as much as 2 years, and nobody has any money. The financial institutions.
Independent administrations. Is it something that the probate court factors in as to whether or not they're getting a reasonable price for the value of the property?
Your Honor, they're...
And if they're not,
That's correct.
Has he had that opportunity?
He's never had that opportunity, Your Honor, because we've never had a situation where the Cherokee County Court of Law has denied the ability to sell the property.
Well, they haven't had the opportunity because you haven't asked.
Oh, yes, we have, Your Honor, and that matters of record. We have attempted to sell property to pay these taxes.
You're saying you haven't got the price you wanted.
That's correct.
But who does today?
Your Honor, we've had to accept some sales at less than what we consider to be their value, but we've done the very best that we could.
Are you setting a value that existed before 1982 on the property, or are you setting a value of what we call fair market value on that property?
What a willing buyer and a willing seller would find to... That would be the value we'd ascribe to today. And,
also, you told us that you have the state has $1 million in property.
That's approximately an estimate of record.
The amount of taxes owing right now are $90,000.
That's correct.
That's all that's involved in this case?
That's the residual of the remaining claims that have yet to be resolved. Now, there are taxes subsequent to this date that have accrued that have not, that are not part of this case, that are all going to have to be paid.
Any other questions? Thank you, Counsel.
Your Honor, I would just
adopt.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thanks.
That completes the argument on the first clause, and the court will now take a brief recess.
Judge.